This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 127. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
So, Berners, my cricket season's over. We've finished the league and we managed to finish one place off the promotion spots in third. So a good season, but not quite what we would have wanted. But you're still going, aren't you?
We are 96 points apiece with one to play.
Wow. Oh, okay. So it's all down to the last game.
Yeah, we've got Finchley, and I think they got to play someone else that's probably doesn't even want to be on a cricket field next Saturday. So we're probably going to both win, and then no one will know who wins the league until about 3 months later. It'll be Christmas or something by the time they've worked it out.
Have to toss a coin in December to decide who wins the league, because all the points are exactly the same.
Something like that. I don't know, but I've heard there's one almighty party going on after the game on Saturday, so I'm pretty interested in that. So let's get the cricket out of the way and get on with the free-flowing stuff.
Availability, yes.
Yeah, I'm in.
Well, a little bit higher up the food chain, we've got some exciting news as well, because, of course, we've been previewing a top international cricketer on Twitter and Facebook in the last few days, and we announced it this week that JP Duminy is coming on to Pitch Vision Academy to be our latest top quality cricketer. What do you think of JP, Berners?
Fantastic. What a talent all the way through the ranks of South African cricket, and now live on the web with PV. So yeah, I'll be really interested. I'm interested to see his course and start to learn the ins and outs of how he sees the beautiful game.
It's quite an amazing story of coming from nothing, because you know he got a professional contract when he was 17. He was playing for South Africa when he was 20. So talk about a quick rise. And then he got a $950,000 IPL contract. So there's a guy who knows how to play cricket, I think, is the short way of saying that.
I would say his timing and his kind of pinnacle of his career has all come at the right time, hasn't it, in terms of the state of world cricket with the advent of the IPL, and he was right at the forefront there. So he's riding off the back of that, I'd imagine, and a very good one day player, very explosive in terms of what he can do in the middle order. So he's very sought after in that style of the game.
Yeah, he can finish in innings. He's a great fielder, of course, and he can give you a few overs in the middle of a one-day game or a 20-over match. So, you know, he's quite the modern cricketer, the three-dimensional cricketer, they call him, isn't it? So I spent a couple of days out in Cape Town with JP, and we got it all on film, and that's going to become available on the 19th of September 2011. And if you're listening to this show as it comes out, you might think, well, I can't wait for that long. Well, the good news is you don't have to wait for that long, because if you go to pitchvision.com/JPDumini21, you can get a free preview of the course, which is quite detailed. I've been editing that this week as well, and there's several videos that we've stuck up for free that you can have a look at and get a feel for the course. And if you like the look of it and you're a bit of a JP Duminy fan, then you can get the full course when it comes out on the 19th. What I found quite interesting with JP is that he's sort of in the media as a naturally talented player, you know, the sort of in the mold of David Gower, you know, the guy who never had to do a day's work in his life, but
see ball, hit ball.
Yeah, exactly. And although he does, on the course, he does talk about, you know, keeping it simple and all those things that players talk about, it's interesting to see how much work he actually puts in and, you know, what a typical day is like for him and how hard he practices and what sort of methods he uses and he used, you know, ever since a young lad to get to the top. And you realise then that that term natural talent doesn't mean as much as you think it might do. It's, you know, it's more about with how much work you put in and what kind of attitude you take to the work that you're doing. So that was interesting, getting that insight from someone who everybody assumes is a quote-unquote natural, But in fact, he's probably one of the hardest working professional cricketers out there, and that is, you know, if there is a secret to his success, that's it. But I won't give away too much, because there's a lot more that he says on the free videos and also during the course. So head over to pitchvision.com or pitchvision.com/JPDumini21, and you can find out the adventures that I had in Cape Town with JP. The other international cricketer who's around in the news this week is, of course, Paul Nixon, the Badger, the Leicestershire wicketkeeper who has been going for 20-odd years. He's 40 years old, and he's played for England, and he's still doing the business for Leicestershire, helping them win the 2020 Championship in England this year. So how about Nico?
Bit of a fairy tale.
Yeah, how about Nico? He's a bit mad. I think that's why he got the nickname Badger. Have you seen some of the sledges that he was coming up with when he was playing against Australia in the one-day series a few years ago? They're classics.
No, I've not come across any. I got involved in a drinking boat race with him once when he was playing in Amsterdam for Leicestershire, and he's quite a character.
Is he?
Yeah, good bloke. He's a very basic kind of bloke and cricketer, and hails from the northeast, of course, up round Carlisle way. So I think he's half English, half Scottish, and yeah, he certainly gets stuck in. He's a very gritty kind of player. I always think he's very military-like in his approach. He does things, and you could imagine him always being on time and doing things as they should be in the traditional book of laws.
Yeah, well, again, he's another guy who's just put in huge amounts of hard work to become successful, and you can't make your debut for England at the age of 36 without working pretty hard at your game, can you? I mean, that says it all. That still gives me the faintest glimmer of a hope. After last week saying I'd given up on playing international cricket, you know, I'm still a year younger than when Paul Nixon made his debut.
That's the attitude, mate. Let's see you there next year.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Matt Prior might have full possession, and certainly the test gloves. But they seem to change the one-day wicketkeeper as often as I change my socks, England. So perhaps I'm in with a chance.
I always wonder what happened to Geraint Jones, that guy who played for Kent, because he seemed to play. I reckon he like runs a sandwich shop now or something in Brighton. But they do kind of tend to come and go, don't they? Not in Australia, mind. Not in Australia.
Not in Australia, no. Well, you know, perhaps we should have stuck with Nico a little bit longer. So, well under him. I own a pair of Paul Nixon autograph wicket-keeping gloves, and they're the best gloves I've ever owned. So well done to Gunnar Moore for producing those, and well done to Paul Nixon for sticking his name on them. So moving on to this week's interview, we are wrapping up our English, or I should say British, summer with Watsonians Cricket Club. If you remember, at the start of the season, we went up to Edinburgh and spent some time with the Watsonians guys, finding out how they prepared for a campaign in the Scottish National Premier League up there. A very interesting case study that we had all running through the summer. I'm going to wrap that up this year with a discussion with club president Ross Brooks, who'll tell us how the season went overall for the side on and off the field, and also what happened in the Scottish Cup, so which we left everybody on a knife edge there last time that we spoke to a Watsonian representative. Stay tuned for that, and then after the interview, we'll be moving on to your questions. So let's move on to the interview. President of Watsonian Cricket Club joins me on the phone. Ross Brooks has been, we've been keeping up with Watsonian all season and tracking the highs and lows of a year in club cricket with the Edinburgh team. The league season's come to a close now, Ross. So how did you find the summer overall?
It's been a pretty wet season, actually, weather-wise. Frustrating with the breaks during the season with the weather, but which isn't great when you're trying to play cricket. And I know some of the UK suffered similar weather, but Scotland seems to have been hit particularly bad this year.
So it's been a frustrating season. How did the season pan out towards the end? What was the league position and what happened in the last few games?
So, well, the last couple of games, actually, for the first 11 were rained off. So there was supposed to be a double header to finish the season just the weekend, just past there. And unfortunately, didn't get started on the Saturday and managed to only get sort of 23 overs in on the Sunday. It sort of summed up the season as a whole, really. So the Sunday was cold, wet, and very windy. So it was pretty systematic of that.
And where did you finish in the league?
The first 11 finished seventh in the league. So the last couple of weeks of the season, there's been a new league structure that's been introduced for this season, which meant we went into a split and played. It was the side sort of fourth to eighth played each other. Fifth to eighth played each other. So having gone into that sort of in fifth place and lost the one game you played in that split, we managed to drop us down to seventh position, which in a league of 16 probably isn't bad, but you know, certainly was well below where we were looking to finish this season.
And the cup?
The cup, unfortunately, exited at the semi-final stage. So yeah, I think the cup was a bit of a saving grace because it gave us, you know, a few more games of cricket really in a rain hit league season. But unfortunately, just put in a pretty bad performance actually in that semi-final and went out to the eventual cup winners who retained the trophy, Uddingston.
So a frustrating season then, one where it didn't quite go according to plan. A lot of things happened that were out of control. The weather, obviously, you've got no control over. But what do you think you would have changed if anything, that was a more controllable, as the modern phrase is?
I think certainly, if we look sort of individually amongst all the players across all the different teams, I think, yeah, everyone will probably accept that, you know, our performances were far from consistent, you know, as a club and as individuals. So I think that's the one thing that's down to everyone to be able to control and probably when they look back on the season that's passed is something that they'll look to improve as we go into future seasons as well. So I think without having the momentum behind us, it's hard to put in consistent performances, but it's the same for everyone really. So I think we need to, you know, try and understand as individuals how we can, you know, really put in those consistent performances, you know, week after week.
Always difficult in club cricket, of course, as you say, it's not easy to play regularly or even train regularly when the weather's against you and everybody's got work to be getting on with.
No, absolutely. But I guess, yeah, I think if you look around and think, well, everyone else, can manage it. So we need to, yeah, I guess from finishing second, you know, the previous season to finishing seventh was a pretty big dip in terms of some of the performance levels. So it's really something that, yeah, all the guys need to work on as we move into next season.
And would you say it was more the core members of the side were not quite as performed as well as they did the previous season, or is it more to do with there were more fringe players around and the fringe players obviously not going to be quite as consistent as the main players in the side?
I think it's everyone. I think everyone, you know, has to, you know, accept responsibility, you know, and as I say, individually. So I think there was some good, you know, certainly some good performances throughout the season, but I think it was, you know, it's a case of putting it together and showing that, you know, consistent, you know, delivery of those skills on a weekly basis.
And how about off the field? You know, as president, you've got more things to worry about than just about the men who perform on the field. So how have you found the season off the field?
It's gone well, I think, and I think, you know, to, you know, understand and take a back step back and understand how far we've actually come. You know, I think we've come a hell of a long way in the last couple of years, but I think also stepping back allows you to understand, you know, what areas you need to improve on and what areas you need to push forward in years to come. So I think we need to constantly keep on evolving to improve as a club. And I think if you accept that, you know, you don't need to evolve and you don't need to change, then you not only stand still, I guess you run the risk of going backwards as a club. So certainly I've been able to, during the rain breaks, take a back step and understand where we need to start improving to keep on developing ourselves as a club.
And what do you say the main, say, two or three points of that is?
I think I generally split things down into sort of sections when I'm looking at the club. So from a youth development side, I think we've done a lot of work over the last couple of years in terms of boosting the numbers of, I think we now are at the stage where we realise that we need to make sure that we're improving in the quality of coaching that we offer to the juniors and start to push forward some of our more talented cricketers at a rate they should be improving as well. So there's a definite way of restructuring the way we do our coaching at a youth side. I think that the way we coach and the way we train as a senior squad can also be changed and be improved as we go through into next season, through the winter training and into the summer training as well, putting a bit more structure behind that. And I think there's always a case of looking to strengthen the whole sort of squad, really, to make sure you've got the right balance of players in there to help you deliver those performances on the field as well.
And that's probably the fun part, isn't it? Just hunting for players and trying to get signatures from people who you think might add to the side. That's always a bit of fun throughout the winter as players move around.
Yeah, and players do move, and I think there are always players that are looking to play at a higher level and challenge themselves. I think people are obviously loyal to their own clubs, and we have that sort of loyalty within our club. But whereas we're in a position where we do lose players, have lost players before, other players will show a willingness to come to us, and I think what we have to do is if anyone's looking to join us or we're looking to bring anyone into the club, that make sure that they're absolutely the right character and they're going to improve us on the field. Otherwise there's no point bringing someone to the club if they're not going to effectively improve you.
Is everything being put to bed now, or how do you make the transition from the end of the summer to the start of the winter?
Well, so we finished up last weekend, effectively, and what I've done over the last couple of years is almost given myself a couple of weeks off before starting again. Although I've almost gone sort of full flow into 2012 planning already, and I guess I started a month or so ago in terms of my there's some decisions being made across Scotland in terms of the structure of Scottish cricket. So there's a few meetings coming up in the next few weeks around the structure, right at the sort of the top level, whether we look at continuing with the National League or going back to a more regional league approach. So I have a lot of involvement in terms of attending meetings and making sure I'm canvassing the players' sort of thoughts on the proposals that are put forward as well. So I think, as I mentioned earlier, we just changed to a 16-team top tier, which I think hasn't been favoured greatly across most of the clubs in Scotland. And there's sort of groups of people that have been put together to understand what the future of Scottish cricket could look like. So certainly I'd like to think that we're at the forefront of helping sort of make those decisions for the betterment of the game in the country.
And what about the club itself? Does everyone disperse, or I suppose there's presentations and things like that to be sorted out?
Yes, and that's one of the things that takes a bit of planning as well, is putting together a sort of our annual dinner and all the awards being decided on over the next couple of weeks. We've got we've got a friendly at a place called the Ship Inn in Ely, which have a side that play exclusively on the beach up in Fife. So there's a game of beach cricket going on this Sunday, which quite a few of the guys are heading up for, and then a big group of us get together and have a golf trip across to the beautiful island of Arran in mid-October as well, which sort of helps keep us together. So I've played in clubs before, and we're you know, you're effectively down tools at the end of August, start of September, and you don't see the guys again until about March. But but generally, we've got a close group here, so everyone tends to keep together and makes the effort really to keep our spirits sort of up through the dark winter months.
And then it's the continual rolling of into next season, and hopefully another step up improvement on and off the field.
Absolutely. So we'll go into winter training indoors in January. So we're only looking at, I guess, 3 or 4 months of sort of downtime for most of the players. We've got a couple of guys who are in the squad to travel to Namibia to play for Scotland in the Intercontinental Cup. Probably a couple of guys as well that are looking to go away and spend winters, you know, playing, you know, in places like Australia, which will be great for their development from a, you know, from a cricket and a personal level as well. But yeah, the majority of the squad will be back, and raring to go sort of in January from that side.
Well, thanks again, Ross, for letting us follow you throughout the summer. It's been a fascinating insight. So Ross Brooks, president of Watsonian Cricket Club. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Time for the question section now. And as always, you have a chance of winning a prize, which is a coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. Remember, JP Dumity is the latest coach to add his knowledge to the Pitch Vision Academy section. So it's a really improving section all the time. And Berners, for the chance to win a coaching course, which could be one of JP's or could be somebody else's, who's got the first question?
Bit of South African biltong flavour. The first question is from Mangalam, who was querying his ability to peak at the right time and building that into his training and also the live game. How do you kind of combine those so you're at your peak at the right time?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, actually, because peaking is one of those words that has finagled its way into cricket speak, cricket coaching speak. It's come across from the Olympics, from the idea of being at your absolute physical and mental best when you reach a big event like the Olympic Games, which comes around every 4 years. So it makes a lot of sense if you're a shot putter, a javelin thrower or a sprinter. It makes a lot of sense to be peaking at a particular time, you know, be at your absolute best for that 100 metres final or whatever it is. But it's kind of the idea behind it, which is called periodization, has been taken up by team sports as well. But the problem of peaking in a team sport, of course, is that it's a much longer season. If you're playing, even if you're playing in the UK, you know, it's which is a relatively short season compared to other parts of the world, you're still having to talk about peaking for months, and nobody can peak for months at a time. You know, maybe a few weeks, but certainly not for months. So one strategy that you can adopt to if you want to talk about peaking rather than sort of maintaining yourself over the course of a long season is to focus on a particular time in the season. Maybe it's, you know, if you're playing in Australia, maybe it's around the time of finals. So you're gradually improving throughout the season until you get to the point where at your peak at finals time. But there's no point in trying to peak all the time because you'll end up just overworking yourself. So the best advice I can give with regards to peaking is to not worry about it too much. Just focus on making small, gradual improvements, whether it's technical, whether it's physical in terms of your fitness, or whether it's mental, because you can peak mentally as well as physically. So just work on small gradual improvements throughout the season, and then maybe look at making the larger improvements when you're in the off-season. You're not having to worry about playing a game every 2 or 3 days or however often it is that you play. We talk a lot about periodization on Pitch Vision Academy, so if you go and have a search for periodization there with an S, not a Z, then you'll find out all the answers. But yeah, the key thing really is not to worry about it too much. It's one of those things which has got a bit more bark than it has actual bite. What's the next question, Berners?
Our next question is from Anonymous, and he has written a fairly in-depth question here, so I'll read it out. The last time I played for a club cricket league was about 1.5 years ago, and I haven't touched a hard ball since because of his studies and last year's school interests. He's 18 years old and generally known to be a right-arm fast-medium seamer who bats at number 7 and is generally told to go out and slog and make a few quick runs. Sounds ideal. I want to get back into cricket next year, and I've been following Pitch Vision articles for about 8 to 10 months, and I've learnt a lot about cricket. I want to up my game and become the best player in my club, but I know it's going to be hard for me, especially as I don't have any cricketing action over the past few years. I have to spend a lot of the time in the nets and in the gym, and also on my mental preparation, because I know with hard work I can really achieve my dreams. I want to up my batting in particular and try and move up the ladder to number 4. Any idea how I can improve my skills and techniques, and how I can bowl with a solid action, have a good consistency with my pace? So I think basically, coach, he's asking you how he becomes a decent cricketer.
It's such a detailed answer. It kind of answers his own question. How do I become a better cricketer? I need to work hard. How would I become a better cricketer? Well, work hard.
It sounds like he's got a bedrock. He's got a bit of a platform, and he needs to just tweak it. And I guess the best advice is what he can do in the short term to bring what he's done in the past back together again.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things that there isn't really any shortcuts to. You do have to put in the hours in the nets to get your brain back to where you were before. The good thing is that if you've done it before, then it's a lot easier to get back there than it is to get there in the first place. So probably the things that I would focus on wouldn't be any kind of major technical changes. Even if I was, you know, the coach who was actually there, I probably wouldn't look at a lot of major technical changes, purely because you've probably got a technique sort of set down there, and it'll take a long time to make any big changes. So the key thing I would work on is the mental side of it. You know, how you prepare for an innings and how you think about playing a long innings. One of the really, really easy ways to get yourself back into the rhythm of batting again is to use the BATIC system that we've got on Pitch Vision Academy. If you go on to pitchvision.com and type in BATIC, do a search for BATIC, you'll find out what that is. It's just I've talked about it before. It's just an MP3 file that you can burn onto a CD, or you can just play straight from the MP3 player through some speakers. And it reflects the kind of pacing and speed of a cricket game. It just tells you how many runs you have to score an over. And then it gives a beep when the ball has to be bowled or thrown or fired from the bowling machine, and you can play that for up to 2 hours. I think it is 2.5 hours, something like that, and really have some really long, intense batting sessions. And that will get your, although you won't be able to make significant improvements in technique in using that method, that's not what we're aiming to do. The idea is to get yourself used to feeling what it's like to scoring runs. It doesn't hurt. I mean, if you are going to work on something with technique, say you're going to pay a coach for a couple of sessions or something, and you want to do some technical work, it doesn't hurt to work on your on drive, because the on drive is the sort of the king of all the shots, if you like. It gives you good balance. It gets you aligned nicely to be playing with a straight bat, and it also allows you, from the on drive position, you not only can play straight and hit the ball in the V, but you can also hit the ball through mid-wicket by flicking it off your legs, or even just doing a little fine flick down to third man to pick up the, you know, the ones and twos that you could fine leg, I should say, to pick up the ones and twos. So it's a great shot to be able to play if you can get yourself in the right position to play it. And also it looks great when you're playing on drive. Everybody thinks you're a much better batsman than you are because, you know, quote unquote, it's the hardest shot to play. I'm not sure whether that is actually true. But it is a shot that does require excellent balance and excellent alignment, and it just looks great with the full face of the bat. Hit it straight back past the bowler and say thanks very much. Fetch that. That reminds me of a story. Actually, I was playing cricket with a chap who hadn't played for a few years, and he told me about once, and he was he opened the bowling against somebody, and. He got hit for four with an on drive, and the batsman walked up to him, reached into his pocket, and took out a small card, gave him the card, and on the card it read, "Go and fetch that." Now that's preparation, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's preparation.
I'd probably punch him in the face. I mean. That's about as cheeky as you can get.
How cheeky is that?
Fetch that.
Go fetch that. So I don't recommend getting cards made up, but I do recommend if you're going to do something technical, working on your on drive. But the key thing is spend a lot of time working on your mental processes. Get yourself in a position where you know what things you need to do before an innings to get you into the right frame of mind to be walking out there and feeling confident. Get your confidence up and then start playing in the way that you have learned how to play. I was going to say the way that comes naturally to you, but it's more about the way that comes naturally to you now that you've learned it in a certain style. So don't worry too much if your technique isn't all there. As long as you've got a reasonable, solid technique, you can work with it. I know plenty of club players who scored a lot of runs over long careers with just two or three shots. You don't need a lot of shots. You just need to be able to... The ones that you can play them well and play them at the right time. And as long as you can do that, you can get away with it. Okay, so that's all we've got time for on the show this week. But before we leave, we've got to decide on a winner for the online coaching course delivered courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. So who are we giving the prize to this week? Our anonymous emailer or the other person whose name has escaped me for the time.
I think we'll go with our anonymous emailer because he needs a bit of belief and he needs a bit of passion, so maybe a JP Drimini batting course will provide him with that explosive ambition to carry on into his club side.
Yeah, well, I'm putting the finishing touches on that now, so when it comes to talking about batting tactics, techniques, things like that course is excellent, so highly recommended, and if you can hang on until the 19th of September, you'll be able to get that. If you want to send in your own questions and have your own chance to win an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy, you can do so in a number of different ways. All the normal offices are open. So, Berners, what is the email address and phone number if somebody wants to get in touch with us?
Email address is coach@pitchvision.com. Or give us a call on 020-88-167-691.
That is an answer phone, so you can leave a message there and you don't have to speak to a human being if you don't want. You can also get us on Twitter. We're at PV Cricket Coach, and our Facebook page is a search away if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You can find us in iTunes. Again, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You can subscribe so you don't have to keep checking back. Or you can subscribe in any other program by going to pitchvision.com and getting the feed and chucking the feed into whatever you like. Google Listen is the one that I'm recommending at the moment, but you can chuck the feed into any podcast catching program that catches your fancy. We'll be back next week with more cricket chat. But until then, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, Coach.